So I'm going to read this quote from the Nagarjuna's The Precious Garland advice. Just as it is known that an image of one's face is seen depending on mirror, but does not really exist as a face, so the conception of I exists dependent on mind and body, but like the image of a face, the I does not at all exist as its own reality. So this is explained with the description on dependent arising, right? So every entity exists dependently. So our thought consciousness, our mind is being very much in habit to see things independent or inherently existence, truly existence. So now we say if our mind is completely understanding of the reality, every phenomena that appears to our mind, at the same time we understand, we realize this dependently arising, dependent originations. So, and then there's no kind of there's no condition or no cause that can deceive our mind, that can be conditioned to give rise to suffering in our mind, because there is no misconceptions, right? Once you being able to eliminate those misconceptions, and there's no condition for the suffering. So because of not knowing the dependent arising, because of we are grasping on everything that is independent existent, truly existence, so that is the cause immediate condition that is for all the afflictive emotions like anger and attachment and jealousies. It all arises from that misconceptions, not knowing the reality, right? So now here the mind is very much trained or the habitually trained into grasping every entity as an independent, the truly existent. Therefore, mind is suffering. Now we say there is a possibility to fix that mind, because we can feed the mind. We can explain the mind that everything is not independent, not truly existence. These are dependent arising. So main thing here is conception of I. Everything is related with I because of that, and then there is more chances to get into the emotional. Just as it is known that an image of one's face is seen depending on mirror. When you see the face in mirror, that reflection of the face is depending on the mirror, we appear as a face. If we grasping on that as a real face, and there is a problem, this is the starting of misconception, right? maybe misconception, maybe if you wear earring on the right side of your ear, when you see the mirror, it's on the left. So that's it, one mistake. So, yeah, now conception of I. So, it's not really as it appears to our mind. I does exist. I always exist, right? Because of that I, we want to overcome the suffering. Because of that I, we want to achieve the liberations, enlightenment, because it's a cherishable. Now, it's cherishable, but how does that I, the entity of that I, exist? It's not exist at all as it appears to our mind. To mind, that I is independent, solid, pure, permanent. So we innately, so appearing those, when the I appears to our mind, it's very cherishable, it's a pure, it's a permanent, it's a independent, it's a solid, substantial exist, very much separate from your body, very much separate from your the mental consciousness. Sometimes it exists, within the body. Sometimes it exists outside of the body, right? So now we are, I does not exist as it appears to our mind. And how does I exist? Independently. What is depending on is this physical body and the mind. By physical body, depending on physical body and mind, and then combination of the mind and body, and it shows the function, it expresses the function, and that when it, come to our mind, we have a habit to label on something. We have a habit to impute on something. So then we say it's a combination based on that combination of the physical body and mind. We say I am. I is there. So I is just because of existence of that combination of mind and body. Then I can exist. If not, I cannot exist. So I exist by depending on physical body and mind. Right. Now independent I is without depending on physical body and mind. If there is something exists as I, that is truly existent, solid existent, permanent existent, it's a pure. So if that is the pure and permanent, there's no need for purifications. There's no need for kind of finding the kind of path to liberation. Right? And I is dependent arising. I is... once you purified the physical body and mind, and pure I can exist. If the physical body and mind is not pure, I cannot be pure, right? So now there is a the possibility to purify the physical body and your mind. You can train your mind. Training your mind is training yourself. There's no other I than the mind and physical body. So then, now this is pretty much expressed the purpose of meditation. So meditation is for training our mind, or now train our mind. When you talk about speaking of the training mind, so we can feed our mind intellectually understanding more knowledge. So that also has a potential or the power to purify our mind. I mean, freeing our mind. And now, once you have intellectual understanding, you already have a focus to meditate, right? If you do not have any understanding, there's no object for the meditation. And there's nothing to be meditated on, right? So, and then first we need to feed our mind through intellectually, cultivating knowledge, understanding the Buddhist idea, reading the Buddhist scriptures, and discussing, do the discussion on that, and then finding someone who can describe the idea, and then pretty much understanding all the concept that is stated in the Buddha scripture, and then we can meditate on that the object, right? So we already have object. So what I'm trying to say is, only the breathing meditations cannot solve the problem, right? counting the breathing has not much potential to purify our mind. It can sometimes, for a short period of time, you can experience the release from something. So if there's too much going on in your mind, so when you focus on the breathing and you count the breathing, and so that has the potential to release the mind. So main thing, idea of the meditation is purifying our mind. So right. So breathing meditation and meditating on the skeletons, the two kind of has to be go first. This is the door for going into the meditation. So this is for someone who has too much excitement, wandering mind, not much attachment, but mind is always wandering. So then for that individual, it's good for meditating on the breathing meditation, right? Focusing on breathing and count the breathing. When you do the breathing meditations, there is three conditions you have to when you do the breathing meditations, you count 1 to 20, 20 to back to the 1, right? 1, 20, 20 to 1. So then within that, try not to add the number and don't skip the number and don't double. So then you do the meditations, right? If you something mistake, if you skip one number or 1, 2, 3, or 4, 5, something, right? And then you do it again from the starting from 1 to 20. If you ate more, and then you do it again, and try to do 1 to 20, 20 to 1. So, and then you also have to, have to have awareness that the breathing is exhale or inhale. So you have to know that this is in exhale, this is inhale. And then you count the number. So that can stop the wandering mind. And then what you do is try to contemplate. So there is many things you can contemplate on. You can contemplate on the reasoning of the emptiness. You can contemplate on dual linked and dependent originations. You can contemplate on 6 causes and 1 effect of generating the bodhicitta, also the compassion. So this is very good. And if individual has a strong kind of attachment, and then that individual, I think there's more benefit when you do the skeleton meditations, focusing on your own forehead and the pinched flesh out. You can see the bone, and then you exaggerate that bone, and you see whole body as a skeleton, right? So then you so that kind of meditation can help you to free from the strong attachment. So then you have to start the real meditation again, like dwelling to an origination or reasoning to establish the emptiness, or 6 causes and 1 effect, generating bodhicitta. So when you do the meditation, I think at the morning time, right after you woke up from the morning from the bed, and then you just contemplate first. First contemplate. I think it's also depending on the individuals. If you have more interest in contemplating dwelling dependent originations, and then you do the dwelling dependent originations, you focus on your heart. There is a the tiny small the moon disk, and then you focus on that, and then you it's the light radiation of the this moonlight. Shows or it's inside the body, you can see whole your body, and you see this is the base of eye, and then you see imagine that how it changing, how it had been changing, it is changing now, and it will change. So then you imagine that the first when you born that kind of body, how it's been changing here until now, and it is changing. And then you see this physical body is a very, it has a limit. The function of this physical body is always, it's a definite, it's a certain that it has a limit of function. So then, and then you just imagine that why is that the function of this physical body had caused by. When you think about it, what is the cause? What is the real cause? What is the real condition? And then you can imagine the previous consciousness that continuously going into another and another. It connect with this new element and build new body, physical body. Now it starts functioning. Now it's going to be end. And the previous, then you imagine that previous life, how the previous life, the individual or the person is going into the process of the function, how it, and then you think because of the strong desire is like craving. Maybe that person is a craving for the fame. Maybe that person is a craving for the wealth. Maybe that person is kind of craving for their taking care of their family, or take too much cherishing himself or herself. And then he always going on creating actions, creating karma. And that keeps the imprints at the last minute. So the imprints lead that person or the consciousness into different realm, human beings and the god realm, the animal, and every any kind of those different realms. That the consciousness, because of the habit of the consciousness, is forced by the habit, forced by the action, the karma, that consciousness has to go towards those different realms, right? And then why that craving has force to the consciousness, the mental consciousness? Because it started the desire. You have interest. More interest, turn into craving. So why that interest or the desire start to have? And then you think because of feeling, right? Why we have that kind of feeling, happy, or when you praise someone, then you are happy. If you say things bad to you, and then you are unhappy. Why that kind of feeling is is happening or happened, right? Because of, and then that has the two conditions. That is, one condition is, and then again, the previous habit. And one condition is the connection, contact. That contact, the faculties and object, like, for example, and the form that can see through your eye consciousness, and the eyeball or the faculty, and then eye consciousness. Connection of that, that creates a feeling that connect with your habit, and that turns into a feeling, right? So why that connection happened to exist? Because of the faculty, because of the, how to say, a generation of faculties. So first generated or the produced in the mother's womb. And why that happened to exist as those many faculties, the five faculties. And that is from name and form. It's the first beginning of connection of the mixing and previous consciousness, and these new elements meet together, mix together, connected. So that builds to produce that faculty, right? And then why that mixed, connected? What is connecting? And then again, you think previous consciousness that brings the habit. That, how to say, force the consciousness to meet that faculties, meet that new elements. So maybe healthy elements, maybe not healthy elements, maybe that is something element has a, and has a potential to make you disable in the future. So that has already happened. Cause and condition is always there, right? So karma and that new elements connected. Karma has a potential to change the shape of elements. Element has a potential to produce the faculties, right? So what kind of healthy or unhealthy is very much depending on the karma. Karma is the kind of the main engine or the machine that is the shaping the elements. And then you think, why that too much habit in your mind? Why that too much karma that carries the consciousness? The consciousness is carrying all those karma in the previous life. And what is really, force us to create karma, negative karma or the positive karma? Because of conception of I, because of their sense of I, that is the real, the substantial cause. It's very forceful to make you act, make you function. And that function, if is associated with attachment, craving, and that creates a negative. If that action is associated with faith, understanding reality, that creates the positive karma. So because of cause and condition, it's happening. So now then you reflecting on the previous previous life and all those first ignorance or this conception I or the self-grasping being a substantial cause, the main condition that forced the consciousness to act in doing something negative or the positive. So that keeps imprints, that consciousness forced by the imprints to go to the next life, to meet with new elements, and connect with new elements, and start to have a new life. And then that changes, that kind of progress, and then it produces or gives rise to the faculties. Faculties connected with the object, five sense object, and produce the feeling. Feeling is now it depends on, it's also your habit, your affective emotions, so, and associated with that feeling, and they create the desire, the further progressing is become, how to say, the craving, and then an existence. That means you are ready to have a new life for in the future. That is the existence, the 10th. And the 11th is born. And then that is, how to say, aging and the sickness and the death. So this is really happening. It's a cyclic existence. Now, I think Buddha Shakyamuni's idea is you can stop that. You can stop that, how to say, unpredictable kind of having a new life. So you don't know where you're going to be born and where you're, and then it's very much depending on many tiny, tiny detailed cosmic conditions. It's always, it's kind of has a potential to give the effect in the future. So you can, meditation here, Buddha Shakyamuni's idea is you can stop the cyclic existence because of you see, you don't have to deal with each of those each of those afflictive emotions. You don't have to find it. So you just directly deal with the self-grasping. Grasping, how you grasping on I. You have to, first you need to cultivate knowledge. And what is the reality or what is not reality? Unreal or real? And then you see, is there any I that is a permanent and a solid? If yes, and then where it is that? Where is that permanent I? Where does it stays? Is it stays in space or is space stays in the body? If it stays in the body, which part of that body? Has it changing by changing of the physical body? If yes, it's very much depending on your physical body. Whenever changing, something changing in the physical body, then you have to say it changes in I. So that means it's not substantially separate from your body. If you improving your mind, cultivating knowledge, you are further kind of understanding about the reality, and that is improving the I, right? And I am improving because my knowledge is improving, my consciousness is improving. So that means I is not substantially separate from your mind. So there is no substantial I that can stay substantially separate from the physical body and mind. There's nothing exist as like substantially separate, independently. So I cannot stand by itself without depending on the physical body and the mind. So, and that is one of the one reality of the I, that is one entity of this physical body, the one entity of this mind. So, purifying I, you have to purify your physical body and mind. If you purify your physical body, you are purifying yourself. If you purify your mind, you are purifying yourself. Right. So then, so now I cannot stand or substantially separate from your physical body and mind. So that means I is impermanent. I is changing, momentarily changing, because of the basis of I is momentarily changing. When the parts of car, the engine and the cover is changing, disintegrating or a kind of fading the color or something. So that is, the car is changing, right? So if you, fix the engine of the car, you are fixing the car. There's no car that is stays or stand without depending on engine and cover. So I is like that. So just and then entity of that I or the entity of that car cannot be found within the engine, within the cover, but still exists in our mind, in the face of expression. You cannot find. So when you said you have a car, you can just, you stay a distance from the car and then you can point. When you go into the car, you cannot point. You cannot grasping the, oh, this is car, right? You can point. So this is only entity or the imputation exists in the face of expression. It exists in the face of thought. That is how phenomena, how things exist. Right? So morning when you just wake up and then you contemplate on this secular existence, and that gives you a kind of the positive idea, is gives you positive interest to see, to think, to act, right? Because it's a secular existence, and then you do some exercise like yoga or the breathing. I remember that one time His Holiness was giving a teaching in Dharamsala. He also mentioned that. So sometimes when you do the exercise, the yoga exercise or something, and there is a the visualization when you do that, the breathing. First, you have to breathe in, right, and then you visualize the Buddha in the Bodhisattvas stays in the feet, in the space, and then you imagine or you that all the Buddha in the Bodhisattvas is dissolving into your body. So when you dissolve and you first you breathe in, and then you start from hung, and then goes like, for example, when you visualize Avalokiteshvara, four arms in front of you, and you breathe in and hung is coming into your body. Om, the stays in your heart. Ah means settle, right? Hung om ah. So more you do that, right? As it, maybe you could say, bringing the positive energy. So that is first your contemplation, right? 12 length of dependent originations, and then you do the exercise, and then hung om ah, hung om ah. So you invite Avalokiteshvara. You can imagine Manjushri or Amitabha, any kind of Buddha and Bodhisattvas. You can imagine. You imagine that the Buddha and Bodhisattvas dissolving into your heart, stays in your heart, settle into your heart. Right. And then focusing, if you have more time, to focus on that, the tiny, the moon disk, and then it radiates lights into your physical body, in your body. You can see through all the bodies, every part of all the organs, you can see in the face, the brain, the eyeball, everything, you can imagine that. And try to see it closer, much, much closer. And then you see, there's nothing I can point as I am. Right? And what is that I've been appearing to me. I have been seeing the eye. What kind of eye I have been seeing, I have been imagining, I have been grasping on. So there is nothing I can point as I. So then the moon disk as the consciousness is not an I. There's not a human being. This part of every part of body you are seeing, so nothing you can point as a human being. And who am I? What is? And then you say, oh, this is kind of emptying, I am emptying substantial I, self-sufficient I. There is no self-sufficient I. There is no I that is stand by itself without depending on physical body. And now what I is exists, I exists in the face of expression. You can express when the physical action is some doing something, right? I am walking, I am eating, I am doing things, I am writing. Because based on physical body, you can impute, you can label, I am writing. So this is, the existence of I is merely exists in the face of expression and thought. So that indicates there is no substantially self-sufficient I. There is no the permanent existence of I. There's no permanent and pure. Right? And that is also indicating that why we being so angry and too much attachment, too much jealous on someone. Because we are grasping on ourselves as permanent, solid. Right? Because the more you're grasping as an I, as a permanent, pure, and then the greater you can see the anger and attachment and jealousy. So, that says the mind can train and the positive view. More you positive, more you feed the mind logical reason. Right, and that is the training mind. That is kind of you show the direction to the mind. If you do not think about yourself, your entity, or how I exist, how I am depending on my mind and my body, if you do not think about that, that is not knowing. Not knowing, as there is no, you do not have a concept. How the I exist, right? And you are more kind of following your habit that creates in your mind from the purest life. So this is how you grasping on I, the pure, permanent, right? That leads more affective emotion. If that is the case, and then we have to do something to deal with that afflictive emotion, that to negate that object that grasped by the self-grasping, right? You have to, it's a deflating of self-grasping. So this is the real meditation. It's a training our mind. This is cultivating knowledge that has a more wisdom, that has a more interest, that has a more excitement, right? So that is the real teacher. If you have that kind of understanding in your mind, you don't have to go to therapy or asking someone what happened to me. So you are knowing you what happened to yourself, right? Someone you do not know. Never saw, and you have never seen that guy, and then you go to that, what happened to me? Because you've been seeing yourself all the time. So yeah, 12 linked and dependent origins, right after you just got up from the bed, to contemplate, why is this happening? what condition, what cause is producing that right now, the present feeling. And then you, and the purest condition, what is produced that purest condition by what kind, what cause and conditions. And then you go back, trace back, right? If you see there is a, something to do with self-grasping, that is the root condition, root cause, right? So that is we are intending to define the root cause. So that is always mentioned in the Buddhist teaching, like self-grasping, grasping on I, grasping on a phenomena, right? So, and what happens if I just ignore it? And that is secular existence, unpredictable happening. You cannot predict what is going to happen because you never notice yourself, your function, your activities. Right? I think this is the real. And then you just do the meditations, Hum Om Ah. Invite the Buddha and Bodhisattva in front of you. Hum dissolves into your heart. Om stays in heart. Ah, the settle in heart. So you imagine that you are imagining very, this is blessing yourself, blessing your mind. And then if you are more, if you have understanding about logical reason that is establishing emptiness, and then you also contemplate on that and try to meditate on emptiness, I think one week, if you do it continuously, there is more kind of, you will see the improvement. So that maybe you're more interested in finding things. So you will see every day, you will see the new knowledge. You are gaining new knowledge. And that kind of makes you to think, right, about cause and conditions. That makes you to think how other people are undergoing the suffering, what cause and conditions. And there is more chances to meditate on compassions, and there's more chances to improve your wisdom. So, any questions?
when you do the visualize, like the Buddha dissolving into you, mm-hmm. you visualize them dissolving on the exhale, correct?
I think if when you first.
Does it matter if it's on the inhale or exhale?
If you are kind of following that method, Hum Om Ah. So there's always inhale.
They dissolve on the inhale?
Yeah, it's like Hum, this, and wind, your air is going out, but Hum is like almost, you feel like it's something going into. Hum, Om. It's an imagination, with your visualizations, right? So you already inhaled. And then, like settles.
Settles. Yeah. Stabilizes.
Stabilizes. Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't dissolve.
Yeah. Right? Yes.
Dissolve.
So first it goes in your body,
uh-huh.
and stays in your heart.
Okay.
Means stabilize in your heart. I also noticed that it's also a practice that is in Hindu practice. Hindu, there's no Hum Om Ah, just Om. Om, Om, there's Hum, dissolve, Om, stays, Ah, stabilize. So I think there is a, because Hum Om Ah is the symbol of Buddha's, all the Buddha's body, speech, and mind. So, any other questions? And then maybe you can also, within that practice, Hung Om Ah meditations, and then you can recite the mantra at the same time when you are imagining that stabilize all the Buddha and Bodhisattvas, their qualities, body, speech, mind, stabilized in your in my mind, and then you recite the mantra Om Mani Padme Hum or Arabaza, Om Dada Dudar Amitabha, whatever you want to recite the mantra, you recite the mantra. And also there is more benefit if you, it's like the Mahayana practice, and you imagine that light that radiates from that Buddha, which is staying in your heart, and that touches every sentient beings, every human beings, every animals, touches. And whoever that touches that light and that feels happy, that pure, I mean, cure their sickness or and sad or unhappy or whatever. So it can cure. You just imagining this. Many, many sentient beings being happy and they are, how to say, free from theirs and the suffering. So more you imagine that kind of happiness, that brings more happiness in your mind. That is natural, the cause is right. I think this is also a main condition to generate the compassion. The real compassions, the compassion is not just focusing on someone's suffering. Mere focusing on someone's suffering is not the ultimate compassion. Compassion means comes with the wisdom that is also see the door to how to free from that suffering. You also have understanding how to free that, how to overcome that suffering. And you also, that person is undergoing that kind of suffering. And then your compassion is not stuck with one idea, one suffering. So because it sees the door to free from that the suffering. Right. So that compassion is compassion that is knowing the cause and the condition of that suffering. Is maybe it's more like if you only focus on someone's, your relatives, the suffering, you just also experience the same time. You are suffering, you are unhappy. This is maybe is maybe you could say that you can label on that as a sympathy or right, something, and not the ultimate compassion. Ultimate compassion means trying to experience others' suffering at the same time that mind that goes with, associate with one wisdom that is also know the cause and condition that produce the suffering. That is the compassion, right? Because compassion is more like a wishing or imagining how to free the suffering, how to free that person from suffering. So that means you already have understanding, right? You already have a method to cure that. You already have understanding of cause and condition of that suffering. The compassion means how to free the suffering, how to overcome the suffering. Not just experience suffering. Any kind of questions? Maybe you. So you'll try it. Maybe from tomorrow morning, the first time you woke up, and then. In the bed, you can meditate, contemplate, dwelling to independent originations. First, focus on this physical body, how it had been changing. and it is also changing. And then first condition, and you think how fast it has been changing, and it's also going to be changed at same speed. There's no kind of 50 mile per hour and then 70 mile per hour, 80 mile per hour. It's not like it. It's the same speed, always, right? Minute by minute, second by second, it's changing. And then also there is a limit of that changing, that function. And then you do the exercise, and there's more comfortable, more kind of confidence. There is a knowledge, there is a potential to, have a genuine faith into Buddha and Bodhisattva. There's a pure faith, because you understand pretty much about the cycle existence. And then you also know there is someone, being that is free from that negative cause and condition. Because you can cure that. If there is a possibility of eliminating the negative actions, and there must be someone who are completely, how to say, eliminate that, all the afflictive emotion and imprints of that afflictive emotions. And then that is the Buddha. The path that lead to the Buddha is a Dharma. Or someone on the path, maybe someone trying, someone who gained the realizations, who had generated compassion in their mind, they are on the path to the liberations. They are the Sangha. Right? So then you can imagine those Buddha, and Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. So you have a good understanding of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. The understanding of the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha is a real faith. It's an unshakable faith, right? So that has the fully potential to get the blessing from the Buddha and Bodhisattvas. I think it maybe first time you just do it for 15 minutes, and then you see if you likely to doing that practice, and you can just extend that, like if 30 minutes, do that. So there's so much effect on the whole day. It's morning, 15 minutes, if you very much focusing on that, that has a very much effect in the whole day. You can experience that, right? And so now this is very, if you are more kind of have interest or meditating on the bodhicitta, right? If you feel more compassion towards sentient beings, and then six causes and one effect, when you think about Tibetan linked to Tibetan originations, and then you imagine there's endless of life, right, in the past. There's endless of life in the future. So definitely I'm connected with all sentient beings, even the, right, insects, animals, everything is connected with me, right? And there is you think all those sentient beings definitely had been my mother, maybe going to be my mother, or my brother and my sister and my father. So I'm already connected with all the sentient beings, all human beings. And then you think, and if that is the case, and that must there must be those sentient beings had been kind to me. And the kindness of their other beings, and thinking about and how can I repay to those sentient beings that had been very kind to me, right? And there's a Chinso and Yongge Chamba means as the lovely love or something. So whenever you see there's no person that you hate, so because nothing, everything is connected with my me, because they had been my mother and sister all the time, many times, maybe some people, maybe 1,000 times my mothers, million times my mothers, right? And then you, after that, so I have to do something for the sentient beings. Now, it's a taking responsibility, like taking a pledge, or the, so I will definitely, I'm going to free those sentient beings. I'm going to cure that their sickness, their poverty, their ignorance, their afflictive emotions. I'm going to release the sentient being from the secular existence. And so, yeah. And then meditate on compassion. This is one, you can do that. Six cause and one effect of generating bodhicitta. And there's also, I think there's many, many idea. And if you have understanding about the emptiness or the selfless person, and you can also meditate on self-exchange of the selfless other, right? You empty the entity of I on physical body and mind, you completely empty that I, and then you shift that entity on the other's physical body and mind. And you are those people, right? And then you try to imagine those many individual sentient beings, different, different body, has a different kind of the condition that likely to give rise to many suffering. You experience those suffering. These are the my suffering, right? And I have to overcome this suffering because of this suffering, not because of the relatives' suffering, not because of my my or I. So just because of suffering, I have to overcome this suffering. These are the my suffering. Whatever the existence of suffering, whatever there is the suffering, these are my suffering, and I have to overcome. Whatever the happiness, these are the my happiness. I have to improve those happiness. So there's a self-exchange. I think this is the practice on self-exchange and self-other need to have understanding of the selflessness person. And so they can also, you can do the practice on that. So first, to be linked to be more easier and more, there's more kind of, it's workable first, to be linked to be origination, think about. And whom all my meditations, and dissolving the Buddha and the Bodhisattva's body, speech, and mind, into your heart, and that pure qualities stabilize in your heart and radiate the light, and that touches every sentient beings, cure their sickness and disease and everything. So you just imagine that. Just imagining has a very much and the potential to accumulate the merits, just imagining. So if you think if you imagine that every human being in this country are happy, and you are also happy, right? If you imagine that all the human beings are happy, that is happy. You are happy, right? And then there is more benefit if you think all the sentient beings, all the sentient beings, right, is happy, overcoming their suffering. They're gaining happiness. And that is, there's more kind of, it's a naturally kind of receiving some happiness in your mind. Yeah, time is not going, I'm finishing.
About reciting mantras, you say that when you do the meditation, you can also do mantras.
Uh-huh.
Now, are mantras part of meditation, or is it just a way to protect the mind?
The word, the mantra, is meaning of the mantra means protecting mind. Mantra is a protecting mind, is a mantra. And now, so mantra, how do we, I mean, what is the, when you recite Om Mani Padme Hum, right? Om Mani Padme Hum. And that is all that has a potential to protect in your mind. Because when you're focusing on Avalokiteshvara, and your object that you are focusing is uncontaminated, that is full of compassions, full of loving compassions. And this is the 100% pure. There's no kind of any slightly misconception in his mind. He's completely overcome, or the purified the misconceptions. There's no slightly of affective emotion, even the imprints of the emotions. That means that object you are focusing is uncontaminated, right? And then your mind focusing means you are connected with that uncontaminated object. So naturally, it has a power, it has a potential to protect your mind. And one is because of his dedications, Avalokiteshvara's dedications, his prayer. She said, whoever recite my name, so right, I dedicate my all the merits, all the wisdom for the person who is reciting my name, gain more happiness, overcome the suffering. So because of that condition, also, there is more potential likely to protect your mind. Right? So just reciting mantra and focusing on image of the Avalokiteshvara, so it has a fully potential to protect your mind. Right? So mind is connected with that pure object. Right? If your mind, so just you think, if you are very angry, right, your anger has a naturally producing some toxic in your body, it's give rise some unhappiness in your mind, in the physical body and mind. Why is that? Right. Why do, when anger arises, there is very much discomfort in the physical level and mental level? Because, and then you think about what is the object of that anger. Object of anger is always negative. You are focusing on negative. So mind connected with 100% negative, and that naturally gives rise to suffering. Unhappy. So when you focus on Avalokiteshvara, and the object is 100% pure and contaminated, so when your mind is connected with that, that is a naturally producing some happiness in your mind. This is the cause and the condition. Not just because of compassion, out of compassion of our Logikshara, not just because of existing in your mind, not just because of you are the person who is meditating on that. Because your mind is connected with the pure object. Right? Anger connected with focusing on negative. So that's why. And attachment give rise to unhappy, because it also is a negative. Exaggerations. Something, object that does not exist. Right? Based on the favorable things, based on maybe one part of the favorable, the good color, right? And then you exaggerate on that. This is the only one, the pure, right? So just by exaggeration on object, and then you can have attachment. Exaggerating on object, you can have anger and jealous, all those things, right? So, you see the anger and attachment is the wrong thought, wrong mind. So wrong mind, give rise to wrong feeling, that's right? Right mind, the positive mind, give rise to positive feeling.
Would you give an example of how you do the exchanging self with others meditation? Like a little short example?
First you make sure that you have no belief that is, you are believing that I and your body is oneness. Make sure that, right? You just have to, give up that kind of belief, believing I and my body is oneness. And then if you have that kind of a strong belief on that, you cannot exchange. You cannot shift your eye on other's body. Because if you shift, and your body is also coming with that eye, right? This is overweight. So you empty that self-sufficient I, substantial I, independent I, and you empty, there is nothing from my physical bodies. Is a physical body is a devoid of I. Any part of physical body, flesh, bone, and all the organs, and the heart, and head, in the brain, there's nothing you can point as I. So from the body side, it's completely empty of I. Right? There's no part. There's no is a devoid of I. Okay, friend. And then about the mind. When you think of mind, eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, and the touch, and the thought consciousness. So there's no consciousness that you can point. This is I. This is me. And the mental consciousness, when you think about the thought consciousness, is always changing. It's always, every minute it's changing. You cannot just grasp on one thought, this is me. Right? Arises and it's bubbling all the time. Right? So there's nothing you can point as if in the label of mind and the physical. There's no I. And by emptying that independent of the self-sufficient I, and then you will say, well, just by collection, right? When you see the collection of all the parts of the car, engines and cover assembled, and put together, and then you can label, there is car, this is the Honda car, this is a Toyota car. Just because of the, how to say, the collection of the part. And then you can label. Now you see, you cannot find the car within that cover, within that engine, within the wheels. And how does our car exist? Just by seeing the basis, an entity of the car exists in the face of expression and the thought. Right? And I is a dependently arising. Depending on the car is a dependently arising, depending on the collection of that, all the parts, right? And collection of the parts, and based on that, having seen that basis, and you can label the car, who is labeling, and your thought, consciousness, your term is labeling. That means it exists in the face of term and thought, right? So now you can imagine that I, that is very much dependently arising, I is not permanently stays in your body and mind, because it's very flexible. Now you can shift that entity of I on other's body. You imagine others, their mental consciousness, their physical, and you just shift an I, oh, this is me. This is my suffering. This human, like this dog's physical body. When you see something very painful and you just experience, try to experience, I am this. This is my suffering. I have to overcome this suffering. And this, I think it has a more, I think this is more very strong. I think this is very, the practice, this is very powerful, because it too much brings experience, feeling, emotional. So you have, it makes you do something right away, right? It's kind of, yeah, so that's, you can do that, because you know I is independent. You know I is something that's, as a self-sufficient, right? So you can label on this physical body that is produced or substantially caused by others, cause and condition. That's your mothers, your parents, right? This is something you did not bring this from your previous life. This is produced by their parents, their the physical cause and condition. And then you can label I on that, and why cannot you label I on the other's body? Right. So yeah. And there I think it's when you self-exchange has many practice. If you can do that, exchange self and other, you can, if you exchange or the shift the entity of I on other's physical body and mind, and then you, even you are practicing jealousy, that is not jealousy. That is the positive practice. If you're competing with someone, your friends, that is also do not bring any afflictive emotions. That brings right thought as a creating merits. If you seeing, how to say, if you are being pride on someone, and that is also not a pride, that's not a delusion. It is a the merit, as a, for example, if you see someone, when you see someone that is, there's more chances to have a jealous on someone. So you see the higher knowledge, someone who are higher knowledge than you, someone who has a more potential than you, someone more smarter than you, and they is more likely to get jealous on that person, right? And then you just shift that entity I on that other's body and mind, and then you practice jealousy, right? This is not jealous. When you're jealous, that is not jealous. That is cultivating the merits. And then after the meditation, you see how you feel it when you see the person, right? And there's no more, interest or the likely to get jealous on the person. So when you shift the entity on higher than you, right, someone who has more quality, and then you shift on I, and then you practice the pride. You still look down on your body and mind. What you have nothing. I have more understanding. I have more good qualities. I have a better car. You have nothing. So when you do the practice, when you finish the practice, you can see there's more, much you have, you can feel much lighter. There's not much burden on you. So exchange, self-exchange has, I think it has a very powerful practice. Even the pride, competing, jealous. So these are the real meditation.
Can you also do that on, like, say, physical suffering, when you see others physically suffering?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it just on emotional things like pride or jealousy?
Any kind of suffering, physical level or the mental level.
Oh.
Yeah, you can. Since that, if you can experience it, if you can feel that, if you understand that, and then you can shift the eye on that, try to experience that kind of feeling, physical level or the mental level.
Physical level? Do you mean it's almost like you're reciting in the other person's body?
Yeah, when you imagine that, for example, that when we believe that hungry ghost, right? There is a being that is, by the force of the karma, they are permanently almost like experience thirst and hunger, right? So, and there's a lot of suffering, and you experience, try to shift yourself, your entity of that I, on that person, hungry ghost, and then you experience that suffering of hunger and the thirst. This is my suffering, right? I have to overcome this kind of sufferings. So this is more this is the compassion. I think this is very powerful compassion, and it's not really drawing you completely into suffering, because it has a when you're practicing on that, it has that brings more confidence, it's more brave inside. At the same time, not completely suffering, and also you have understanding of cause and condition. What cause and condition that creates that kind of suffering, hunger and thirst, right? And then that means you already have idea there is a possibility of overcoming that suffering. And that brings more responsibility. So I can do that. I have to do that. So that brings more confidence, more wisdom, more kind of compassion.
So using the hungry ghost example, like when you're finishing up that meditation, like after you've realized, you know, thought about what the causes and conditions that creates the suffering of a hungry ghost, then what you'd like dedicate that knowledge to them being freed from it?
Yeah, you imagine that you are the one of, you imagine that shifts your entity of that I on one individual hungry ghost, and you are that, and I am experiencing the hunger and thirst. All those hungry ghosts, now you can experience, you can feel how the hungry ghosts are suffering. And then you just dedicate on, and Buddha and Bodhisattvas, please free those hungry ghosts from the hunger and thirst. Right? There's more powerful, because you are experiencing, and you are asking the request to the Buddha and Bodhisattvas to free themselves. Right? Free those hungry ghosts. And you are imagining, if you are imagining that I stays in animals, body and mind, and then you try to experience how they are experiencing suffering. And then you imagine all the animals are undergoing that kind of suffering. And then you dedicate and again request to Buddha and Bodhisattvas to free those animals from the suffering. And then human beings. Right.
So you could just go through all the realms and do like a meditation on all the different realms of suffering?
I've never seen, but I heard in Tibet, some practitioners, when they try to meditate in compassion towards the, hell realms beings, someone who is undergoing the suffering of cold. So they try to go out in the snow time, and they stay in the snow and try to feel the coldness and outside, and try to meditate on that, how those sentient beings are, undergoing the suffering of the cold. But I've never seen, but I heard that, yeah. So someone trying to do that. Because I think it seems like silly, but it's doing very the great job. Yeah.
You've never done it?
Oh, no, I've never done it. I never wanted to go out in the snow. I think for the imagination, you don't need to experience that. I had a special in Tibetan. The official people said that. I heard one of, he is trying to do that meditations. Because those, the person who is doing the practice is, I heard he is very much interested in the Lam Rim. So he heard many, many times, have received the teaching of Lam Rim, and then he is more kind of interested in the meditation on compassion. So one time he was doing that, going outside in snow, to try to experience how cold it is. And if that is the cold, and the hell realm beings who are undergoing that kind of suffering, not for one day, not for 1 minute, not 1 week, and 1 month, not 1 year, many years. So you can, I think this maybe helps you to to more, maybe there's a more easy or to meditate on that the suffering of experiencing the coldness or something.
I'd like to get a clarification on what you talked about earlier regarding exchanging self and other meditation. You talked about emptiness first, as if it's a preliminary before you do the exchange self and other. Is it necessary to have a emptiness meditation first before you get into self and other?
Yeah, exchange self and other. It means the guide to the Buddha Sadhu mentioned that and said exchange self and, self and other. Within the, how to say, in chapter 9 or something, yeah, it's talking about generating the bodhicitta, exchanging self and others. So, and his idea of exchanging self and others based on understanding of the selflessness, emptiness. And I think there's some, you can force your mind. I think there is a possibility, because one of the Adesha's master, and his understanding level of the view or the emptiness is not prasangika schools, even not the mind-only school, is a sutantika school. And his practice of sex, exchange self and other, is very powerful, because the story, I think this in Lamrim Lama Juba, yeah, there's one story, yeah. So one time he was really practicing, and his understanding of the emptiness is not really very subtle, very profound, not very profound, but his practicing on the compassion is very powerful. One time he was giving a teaching, and one person, I mean, there's one dog coming on during his teaching, and people beat the dog by the stick, and dog was kind of screaming, and he also screamed, and he just felt. And people thought he's just faking, and he shows the bruise on his back. So he can just exchange. He can feel the dog's feeling. Yeah, there is a, what do you call that? Bruce, right? Yeah. So that means his practice is very powerful. Compassion is very powerful. He can even shift the feeling of the dog. So that in that case, it is not really, if you are very willing to do that practice, generating bodhicitta, and you have more kind of, I think this is because of his previous lives, pretty much there's much habit or the familiarization on that practice in previous life. So therefore, and his practice, exchange self and other, is not much depending on it, understanding on emptiness. So, but at least he's understand there is a no self-sufficient I. Not a profound, very subtle emptiness, is he being able to empty the self-sufficient I, substantial I that stays substantial, separate from body and mind. That kind of I, he completely understand that is not exist. Okay. Realize, right?
Does the other entity feel that when it's that strong? Does the other dog or person or whatever feel that as well? Feel the strength of you reaching, not reaching out to them. How do you say it?
Taking away their suffering?
Yeah, taking away their suffering. Does the dog know that the man is thinking to help him?
I don't think so. I've never asked the dog. I don't think so. I don't think the dog has that much knowledge. You see, there's someone who is trying to experience his feeling. it depends on if you so you can act imagines hungry ghosts and hell realms and human beings who is undergoing very much and the painful suffering. You can do this practice, but not much. It's not really, and the person is not doing that, right? The object has nothing to do with that practice. So you are trying to experience that feeling. You are gaining the compassions. You are gaining the wisdom based on that practice. Right, but there is not much effect. Effect coming from the causing condition, right? So your cause, your practice on the compassion is the cause that brings the feeling in you. It's not bringing the feeling on other. If that is the case, then we already have some compassion because the Buddha is always doing that. Buddha and the Bodhisattva was practicing self-exchange, and right. So we are not really. We have to force ourselves to do that practice, right? Maybe if you have a very strong that kind of the practice, maybe you can make lighter the suffering on other, right? And I think there is something sometimes is related as something to do with the relation. Ice cream? Oh.
Very interesting question.
Yeah.
I think a lot of time we do. Oh, it is moving. It is moving.
Wow. It's like a little spoon squishing us around.
That's a long one.
Still going.
So this earth is floating in the space.
It's not stop. Ooh, look at the Buddhist aura.
Oh, yeah, I better stabilize that. Behind the Buddhist.
It's like you are going on Amtrak. We're almost in downtown. It's a good sign. So we're talking about the self-exchange. Yeah. So when you see those conditions, you just make it. There is a if that is exaggerations in the positive way, oh, this is a good sign, I just dedicate. Oh, remember that time we are talking about practicing exchange self and others. At that time, we experienced the earthquake. So so earthquake is the signal or the kind of, it's a reminder, right? So we think more on that.
The earthquake brings up a question I've had more about when you were talking about the mind training stuff. Like you were saying, everything comes from our mind, and we just collectively experienced an earthquake, so how does something that we have no control over making come from our mind? We were sensing it, but how did it arise from our mind?
Mm.
like events we have no control over. How does that arise from our mind?
I don't really get it.
Maybe I'm not asking. I'll think about it some more. Maybe I'll ask next week.
She feel like Sis Krishna just said that everything's our mind's projection, our labeling.
Yeah.
And then we just experience the earthquake. Where did earthquake come from? That's my question.
Uh-huh. Okay. Earthquake is not the reflection of your mind, is it? I really don't want to say this book is the reflection of my mind. This table is the reflection of my mind. Right? I think every movement is a real earthquake in your mind when you get emotional.
Okay.
It really moves in the whole mind, whole physical. It's affecting non-physical and mind. That kind of mind, that kind of movement is coming from the reflections, grasping on the reflections. So sometime you are very relaxed and just having, good time in your house while sitting on the comfortable chair, and you are very comfortable, and suddenly you remember something, right? Maybe when you are watching TV and you remember that someone says something bad to you, and that immediately, one instant, that puts you into emotional, right? Why that kind of movement, that kind of earthquake is coming from, right? So grasping on that imagination, that negative imaginations, believing that is true, happening today, right now, that shakes the whole body. That kind of evil, earthquake. That's earthquake, yeah. It's a grasping on your reflection as a true, solid existence. You're not knowing that reflection of my mind. You're not knowing that arises from your mind. You're kind of, you have a feeling with a belief that things that appears in your mind is really happening now.
It's real.
Yeah, that's real. And believing on that, that give rise to earthquake. maybe instantly you just break some cup maybe at the time. That, he said that. Yeah, sometime you are in a neutral state, and something kind of creating the fantasy or something. Or if something you say, right, if what happened, if I won the lottery, what am I going to do? Some excitement is coming, right? So you are also has a grasping on the reflection that is the solid. You are imagining something, and then at the same time, you are believing that imagination is the real. Right? This small earthquake. After that, maybe tea is more delicious, maybe more tastier. So that is the mind. Any other questions? Except the earthquake.
I probably missed the first class. Uh-huh. You were talking about six causes and one link, one effect.
One effect. It's
what
about
is it?
I think I have talked this before. So about the generation of bodhicitta. So this is generating bodhicitta, the two ways. One is, we call it samutaju jashinshuju. Samutaju means is profound, the generating bodhicitta from the profound view, right? Or is exchange self and other, meditating on emptiness, bears an emptiness, exchange self and other, and then you generate the great compassions. After that, you can generate the bodhicitta. This is one way of generating bodhicitta from the profound view. This method is coming from Manjushri and Nagarjuna's, and then Lama Atisha. And six cause and one effect is methods coming from Maitreya Buddha and Asanga, and then goes to the Atisha. So two methods from the Atisha. Two rivers join into one method, that's from the Atishas and Lama Tsongkhapas. So the sixth cause and the one effect is believing all the sentient beings, I think based on 12 lengthened band originations, understanding of that. And then you think of all the sentient beings, that every sentient beings definitely had been my mother, right? And then I have connected with all the sentient beings, all the human beings there, animals and every beings. And then think of their kindness, right? And thinking of how to repair their kindness. And thinking of every sentient beings, there's no sentient being that and any translation, there's lovely love or something. That means likable, something. Every sentient being is, there's nothing you can see that is, you are dislike those sentient beings. Because when you're reflecting on they had been your mother and they've been kind to you, how to repair their mind. Repair their kindness. And then you, after that, when you see the sentient beings, there's no single sentient beings that you are really hate towards the sentient beings. Every sentient being seems very likable, right? So that is mothers had been mothers, and they've been kind to you, and think of their kindness and how lively love, the practicing on that, and then generating the responsibilities. So I will be the one who can free the sentient being from the suffering, from the secular existence, from the misconceptions. I'm going to be one that who can lead the sentient beings from the liberation state. Right? So strongly praying on that, right? And then practicing the compassion. And six cause. An effect is, wishing, gaining the enlightened state for the all sentient beings. So this is the one, the real altruistic intentions, bodhicitta. So this is, when you, meditating on bodhicitta is not, there's no other than meditating on compassion. When you do the meditate on compassion, and automatically that will put you, generation of bodhicitta. Bodhicitta arises from that compassion. It's like there is no kind of meditation that is only just focusing on Buddha, enlightened, right? So it's coming from, bodhicitta means bodhicitta. There's two aspirations. One aspiration is the conditions, main conditions. One aspiration is associated with that, the bodhicitta. The first aspiration is freeing all the sentient beings, compassion, that is a compassion. And second aspiration is wishing, gaining the enlightened state. The prime consciousness that focusing on the quality of the Buddha, is the bodhicitta. Right. Because of the force of the compassion, when you focus your wish to gain enlightened state, that is the bodhicitta. Without having a cause of compassion, there's no compassion, there is a possibility you can desire, you can wish to achieve enlightened state, but it's not a bodhicitta. Right? Bodhicitta means by the force of the compassion, then you wish to achieve enlightened state. That is the bodhicitta. Yeah. No questions?